Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Homage to the Buddha, the blessed, noble, and fully self-awakened one. I'm looking at the Dhammapada, verses 22, 23, 24. They're very similar. I shall do the little chanting. Appamado amata padang, pamado macchuno padang, amata ma miyanti ye pamata yata mata. Evam vise sato nyatva. Appamadang hi pandita, appamade pamodanti, ariyana gocharata, te jayino satatika, nichang dalha parakama, pusanti dira nibbanang, yoga kemanganuttarang. In my best voice. So it translates as this. This word, pamado, that's what we're looking at, appamado, appamado. It's translated variously. Here it's translated as conscientiousness, but I slightly prefer, what's his name? Jill Fronsdale. He uses the word vigilance. So vigilance, yeah. So a translation is, vigilance is the path to the deathless. Negligence, the path to death. The vigilant do not die. The negligent are as if already dead. Then there's a commentary to that. So wise people know very clearly that conscientiousness, so that's the other word for it, another translation, is the state of the deathless. Therefore, they rejoice in conscientiousness. They praise it and pay high attention to it. They are delighting in the sphere of the noble ones. This is, of course, nothing else than Nibbana. So again, the only way to reach this state is to make conscientious effort in this direction, applying all one's energy and striving. So that, of course, remind you of the Buddha's last words, you know, strive diligently. The next verse says, knowing this distinction between vigilance and non-vigilance, vigilant sages rejoice in vigilance, delighting in the field of the noble ones. So that's much the same. The commentary just says you cannot proceed on the path towards awakening without it. And if we are negligent, how can we find the energy to purify our hearts? So consciousness is the path, conscientiousness is the path to the deathlessness. Only with it we can find the way to our goal, Nibbana. And negligence is the way to repeated cycle of birth and death. Conscientious people are able to achieve or reach Nibbana, thus escaping the rebirths, whereas the negligent cannot escape. They may as well be dead already. And the final verse, absorbed in meditation, persevering, always steadfast, the wise experience Nibbana, the ultimate rest from toil. So again, the commentary adds, continuing the line of the of reasoning of the previous verses, if one knows that conscientious heedfulness, vigilance, or diligence, these are all words for the same appamado, is the key to reaching Nibbana. Applying this to the practice of meditation, one has to persevere constantly and with strong effort. By this, we're able to reach Nibbana, to really touch it here and now. Thus, we obtain the highest peace from bondage, the only true peace and freedom available. Now, I usually read the story, but frankly, I can't see any connection whatsoever, which tells you that whoever compiled the Abhidhamma thought, now, where did this come from? You know, it probably, I don't have the ability to find out whether these verses are directly from the Buddha, but most of them are. But anyway, this is the story they attach to it. It's a long story, so I've just reduced it. So Samwati was the consort of the King Udena of Kosambi. Now, Kujatara was fetching flowers for her, and the Buddha was present. And she heard a talk and became a stream entrant, a sotapanna. Now, she went back and she told Samwati, the queen, and all the maids, and they began to take on the teaching, and they began to pay homage to the Buddha as he came on arms round. But because they were afraid the king might not like what they're doing, they would do it through little holes in their dwelling. You can imagine that. Now, there was another consort, the very beautiful Magandhya. Now, the story, this is a parallel story. Her father was a Brahmin, and he had offered her to the Buddha as a bride. And the Buddha had rejected it, having no sensual pleasure, and reminding him that the body was full of filth. Well, the Brahmin and his wife realized that, of course, everything's impermanent, and believe it or not, became anagamis, non-returners. But the daughter vowed revenge. She was very upset with the Buddha. Anyway, she went and told Udena about these holes. This is the king, yeah? But he didn't seem to be concerned. So then she began putting ideas in his head that he was in grave danger. And she hid a snake. When the king was going to go over with his lute, his veena or his guitar, and play a few songs for the queen, something like that, she hid a snake inside this the veena and put flowers over the hole, you see. And when they arrived, of course, and the flowers were taken out, the snake jumped out, and the king was furious. So he lined up Queen Samwati with all her maids and fired an arrow to kill them all, just like that. But the loving kindness of the women was such that the arrows failed to connect. Would you believe that? And so this way, the king discovered or realized that the women were innocent. However, Magandhya was not satisfied. She asked her husband to go and burn the palace down, which he did, and they all died. A fantastic story, isn't it? You can see this on Hollywood. And I got the last paragraph says, so as soon as he heard that the palace was burning, he rushed to the scene, but it was too late, and he suspected it had been done by the instigation of Magandhya. But he did not show that he was suspicious. Instead, he said, while Samwati was alive, I was very fearful and alert, thinking it might be harm, thinking I might be harmed by her. Only now I have peace of mind. Who could have done this? It must only have done by somebody who loves me dearly. Now, on hearing this, the foolish Magandhya promptly admitted that it was she who'd instructed her husband to do this terrible deed. Thereupon, the king pretended to be very pleased with her and said that he would grant a great favor and honor to all her relatives. So the relatives were sent for, and they came gladly. On arrival at the palace, all of them, including Magandhya, were seized and put to death in the palace courtyard. Thus, the evil Magandhya was punished for plotting the death of the holy queen and her attendants. And then he says, when the Buddha was told about these incidents, that's what he said. He just talked about Appamado. So if you can sort of make the connection, you must email me. Anyway, that's by the way. Can you take your microphone off, Ian? Okay, so we've got this word Appamado. Machuno just means death. So it's a very favorite word of the Buddha. And there's some, where are we? Here we are. Oh, dear. I was just going to quote, oh, no, that's right, sorry. Just going to quote a couple of verses. Okay. So this is actually a tip that I did. I'm going to share the screen and hopefully you'll see it. Okay. So this is the little tip I did on it. Remember that it's his final exhortation, this thing here, strive diligently for your liberation, Appamado Sampadeta, there we go, Sampadeta, Sampadati, I think it is, or Deity. It just means to strive. It means actually, you know, to work hard at trying to get what you want, to fulfill a longing. I rather like that, fulfill a longing. Then, although he mentions lots of virtues which stop unwholesome states arising and to develop wholesome states. So here's a couple of quotes from that. Let me see if I can get it all on one screen. No, I can't do it. Oh, here we are. That's it. So here's a verse from the Anguttara Nikaya, which is the verse of Numbers. So the teaching is set out in Numbers. One of these, two of those. Very Theravada, yeah? And it says, I do not see even a single thing that so causes unarisen, unwholesome qualities to arise and arisen, wholesome qualities to decline as heedlessness. That's another word for this, appamado. The one who is heedless, unarisen, unwholesome qualities arise, and arisen, wholesome qualities decline. It's a funny way of saying things, but there we are. And then he says, and then in the next verse, of course, he says the opposite. Now, what I did was I looked up words for diligence, because that's how it's normally translated. And I came up with lots of little words, which are sort of approximate. And then when I sort of separated them out, I was quite pleased to see that you could divide these words into mindfulness, attentive, vigilant, heedful. You also had a sense of care with word diligence, careful, conscientious, meticulous, thorough, painstaking. And diligence also is a sort of effort, you know, to be diligent at your work and all that. Hardworking, industrious, assiduous, persistent, zealous. And of course, all these words do bring a nuance to the meaning. So I just made up a little exercise here, you see. So you can take each word mindful and just ask yourself, have you been, like, when you reflect on the day, or something that you've done, you can always sort of ask yourself these questions. Have I been mindful? Have I been careful? Have I been diligent? Did I put the right effort in? Now, when it comes to spiritual practice, of course, bringing that quality of mindfulness into daily life, it is very much about being aware of how we are reacting to what we're doing. So even things like, you know, eating or gardening, simple tasks, is always to stop for a moment and to make sure that we've got the right intention. Now, it's often the case that you might start off with the right intention, but then it slips into its opposite. So you might be washing the pots and the mind starts wandering off somewhere and you find yourself washing the pots very angrily. And so you have to stop and consider and then restart. So the whole process is one of restarting. You stop as soon as you see you've gone offline, you've gone off piste. You sort of stop for a minute and just bring yourself back. And that's diligence in the practice, ordinary daily life. And you can see from the antonyms, from the opposites, lazy, sluggish, slothful, can't be bothered, do it tomorrow. So these are the underlying tendencies. So there is this understanding that when some unwholesomeness arises consciously, it's always there, present underneath as a potential. So those are your anusaya. Here, of course, the Buddha is only concerned with what makes us suffer, what causes problems. But the truth, but it's obviously also true for all the virtues. So when we find ourselves being gentle, kind, generous, those qualities are also as potential within our hearts. And I've just got here, when you recognize something's come up which you don't like you're getting angry with something, or you're getting anxious about something, or you feel a bit down because of something, you have to just be very careful that we don't push it away with a sense of not wanting. So that action of, suppressing something is only going to add more bad energy into the system. So I've got this thing about parking it. So you just put it to the side. So you don't use anger or fear to get rid of something. You just put it to the side and turn your attention towards what you want to do. In fact, that's one and the same action. If you just acknowledge, for instance, that there's irritation, and then you acknowledge it, and you, as it were, just leave it to the side, and you draw your attention to what you want to do. That way, you're not suppressing, you're not adding further unwholesome energy into the system. Refuse to be hijacked. See? So that's my little presentation for the evening. And I can only hope it is of some help in your practice, and that you will be fully liberated sooner rather than later.